Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. My co-host for this morning is Andy Lowe, producer, marketer, rising star. How do you like that?
Man, your introductions get better and better every week.
Well, that's the idea. At Business Radio X, you have your own show, Renegade Radio. You're also working on Executive Talk. Good morning.
How are you, Dr. Tim?
I'm doing great. Did I scare Stone away?
I think that's what happened. I think he just looked at it and said, you know, I can't keep pace anymore.
I'm so glad to hear that. Actually, you're kind of taking over the studio, aren't you?
Yeah, we're doing some exciting things over here in Alpharetta, so I'm really excited to be sitting at the helm these days.
Okay, great. Well, a common theme I've used for the programs in February is passion, and specifically, how does a writer get the passion that he or she sees in his or her mind and feels onto the page? And today's guests provide us with a different look at passion, bringing that passion and purpose together to create a practical guide. Now, I know that the word guide suggests how-to, and in a sense, the books generated by my guests are how-to books, but they are so much more than that. And in my conversations with them this morning, I hope to draw out of them how each went about creating practical guides with passion, and while clearly bringing that passion into their writing in a guide. Jill Jepson and Renee Winchester are today's guests, and I'm going to start with Jill. Jill is calling in from beautiful Minneapolis, Minnesota, where I once lived many years ago for 3 years while I was a grad student. Jill is a writer, traveler, linguistic anthropologist, and college professor, and describes herself as a writing and spirituality coach. And I've had the privilege and opportunity to have some coaching sessions under Jill's direction, and they were great. She provided amazing help and insights for me to grow in my own writing. Her book is Writing as a Sacred Path, a Practical Guide to Writing with Passion and Purpose. Good morning and welcome, Jill.
Well, hi, Dr. Tim. It's great to talk to you again.
It's good to hear your voice, and thank you for joining us at an hour earlier, since that's what it is in the Central Time Zone. Let's begin with the simple. How did Writing as a Sacred Path come about?
Well, Writing as a Sacred Path was really the culmination of a lifetime journey. I spent many years of my life on a spiritual search, and that spiritual search took me all over the world. I worked with Shinto priests in Japan. I studied Zen in Japan. I visited with shamans. I traveled through Siberia. I traveled through the Middle East, and I spent 3 years in India. As I searched, I found many rich, wonderful paths. I talked to many religious practitioners, spiritual practitioners of all kinds of traditions, and many lay practitioners, and both teachers and gurus and priests and monks, but also just lay practitioners. And yet I found that I wasn't really finding a path that felt that it was my path.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a kind of life crisis after many years where a number of things just kind of collapsed in my life. A bad marriage, I had a physical illness that was kind of misdiagnosed, and so I was sick all the time. I was having career difficulties, and kind of went into a depression and a sadness over that. And to get through that, I began to think about my writing. I had always written, but to think about my writing differently and think about it as a path for healing. And as I went through that process, I began to realize this really was my spiritual path, that writing was my spiritual path, that it had been with me all along, that I had been looking for something that was a more traditional path, through Zen or through a Christian path or through some path that was defined for me outside of myself. And what I found instead was that writing had always been with me, and it had been as part of my path through these different traditions, but it was really the core of my path.
Wow, and you know what? I could. I'm ready to go home now. I got what I needed today.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's exactly what came through my mind, Jill, because when you talked about that you did all this searching and then you found that writing for you is your spiritual path, and that's kind of what happened to me back in 2000 when I left my previous profession and then went off and studied with a shaman, and now you've just kind of confirmed that writing in and of itself can be the core and the basis for that spiritual journey.
Yes, it certainly can. And I think that for most writers, even writers who don't think of themselves as spiritual people, that writing really does play that role in their lives. It is a link to a greater power. It's a link to other people. It's a way of being in the world. And out of that realization came the book, Writing as a Sacred Path.
Okay. So what purpose did you have in mind as you wrote that book?
Well, you know, honestly, I wasn't thinking about purpose as I wrote that book. I was thinking about simply putting on the page the experiences that I'd had as a spiritual seeker, finding writing as a sacred path, and also presenting for the reader a whole series of specific practices that they could do to find that connection. The book, as you know, has about 96 different practices that you can do. I call them sacred tools. I'm not wild about the term exercises because it always makes me think of gym class.
And sweat.
And I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
So I use the term sacred tools. But they are what people might call writing exercises. And there's just many, many different exercises, different sacred tools that I have throughout the book that I hope that people can use as doorways, as gateways to find that connection and find the way to be a writer in the world and the way that writing can be a sacred path for them.
Well, along with that, you also have, and I'm holding your book in my hand as I speak. Of course, our listening audience can't see that, and you being in Minneapolis, you can't see that. But you do have the sacred tools, but darn, I can't find it right now. There's another category that you use in here, too, other than sacred tools. But how did you come up with the idea of calling it a practical guide? What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, the term a practical guide actually was created by one of my editors when we were trying to think of a way to present the book and for a subtitle that would give people an idea of what the book was all about. And it was very important to her to come across, and I think she was absolutely right, to come across with the idea that this wasn't just a discussion. It wasn't a philosophical you know, treatise on writing as a sacred path. It wasn't just a personal story or a memoir, that it was a guide, that it was a way that people could be, that people could use to bring themselves a richer, deeper spirituality through writing. And that term, practical guide, came out of that.
Okay. Editors do things like that, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that one of the things for me that was central about writing the book were the four basic paths that I feel that writers follow. And the book is divided, as you know, into four parts, four sections. And mm-hmm. One is the path of the warrior. One is the path of the shaman. One is the path of the mystic. And one is the path of the monk. And all of them, I felt, express a different way of being a writer in the world. I think most writers draw from all of those different angles, all of those different paths. But for some of us, one takes precedent over the others. There's different kind of combinations of them. So for me, that was really central to the meaning and purpose of the book, was to bring out those four different ways of being a writer in the world.
And that's one of the ways that I really hooked into the book personally, because I understand the mystic to a certain degree simply because of trying to engage in serious meditation throughout my life. The monastic path, of course, comes from the monastic tradition, the historical grounding, if you will, of not just Christianity, but many faith traditions have that concept. Having studied with a shaman, and your chapter 7 in there is called Darkness and Healing on the Writer's Path. That's kind of like, I guess you were talking about finding writing as the release out of the darkness you fell into. I did the same thing. And then the warrior road, the honor and courage in the writing life, it just resonated from beginning to end with me.
Well, I've had some wonderful comments from readers who have talked about how the four different paths have resonated with them and have made them aware, more aware of their role as a writer in the world. And it is very interesting because for some people it's all four paths, and for some it's a specific path. One of the specific paths just feels very right to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're kind of touching on a question I wanted to raise, and that is, because you wrote the book, have people shared a variety of stories with you from their own life, from their own writing?
I've had some wonderful stories shared with me over the last 3 or 4 years since the book came out. It's been 3 years now that the book has been out. People who have talked about really being lost in their writing or ready to give up on their writing or confused about what their writing meant or frustrated. I think frustration is one of the, it's almost endemic among writers. Writers are frustrated because they don't feel that they're writing as well as they should, or they're not getting the worldly gifts of writing that they're looking for. They're not publishing, or they're not making money, or they're not achieving what they think they, what they had set out to achieve. And how many, many people have talked about that frustration or disappointment or confusion, and how the book has helped them find a way through it.
Oh, I like that. I like that. My mind is floating there. I'm thinking of my own clients. And you know, in my Writing Secrets book, which you were kind enough to review and comment on, I think I sent you the chapter on Lectio Divina, only I don't call it that in my book, but it's that spiritual thing. People think they know what they want to write. They think they know where they're headed, but then they oftentimes need that clarifying act or whatever, and your book does provide that through the sacred tools. My chapter 6 in Writing Secrets does the same thing. You teach college students, correct?
Yes, I do.
Do you share this book with them?
I do in appropriate settings. I actually teach, a lot of my courses are anthropological linguistic courses, so they're very technical courses about language. But I do also teach writing courses, and one of the courses I teach, for example, is creative nonfiction. And creative nonfiction is exploring your life and putting it on the page. And so I do use exercises from my book with my writers, especially in creative nonfiction.
Now, you have a fascinating background, at least for me, and you've shared that in part with our listeners, but your first terminal degree was a PhD in linguistics, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And then you went back and got an MFA, correct?
Yes, in writing, yes.
That's really following your passion, isn't it?
Well, it is, yeah. I've always been a kind of follow your bliss kind of person. Mm-hmm. It hasn't. Sometimes that's a good thing, and sometimes it needs to be tempered a little.
Oh, really?
But that is definitely. Yeah.
I know that too. Yeah.
Yeah, but that really was a ended up being a very wise decision for me, and the right decision for me. I did go back into an MFA program many years after having completed a doctorate. But, you know, I wasn't the only one. In the program that I went into, there were several people who had doctorates. There were a number of people who were professors already, or retired professors, or retired physicians. And so it was, I was far from the only person who took that route.
Wow. Well, tell me, business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals are the target market of Right Here, Right Now. What kind of advice or encouragement would you share with them about the writing they might do?
The most important thing that I think about writing is a trust, and is trusting in the writing process. I think all writers, one of the things they do is try to force the process through. In other words, they have an idea in their heads that I have to write this particular thing. I have to write it this particular way. It has to come out sounding the way my high school English teacher would approve of. We have, a lot of us have scars from high school English.
Oh, my, yes.
And, yes. They get instead of that being a force for helping them write well, it ends up being a block. It ends up being a hurdle that they can't get over. I tell my writers of all levels, including people I work with who are in business, I work sometimes with activists who want to use writing in their activism, as well as, of course, my college students, that there has to be a point of trusting the process, of allowing yourself, for one thing, to write badly. That sounds very contradictory, but that is often the first stage. Just allowing yourself to write, allowing yourself to write what comes out without judgment, without evaluation, without having those voices in your head telling you this isn't good, or it's not what I intended, or it's not what it should be.
Wow.
And allowing that to come and trusting in the process of writing, that the process of writing will lead you into better writing and will lead you into writing what you need to say.
Oh, I like that. That is great. Well, I've already cleared with you that you're willing to hang on the line while I move on to our next guest. But before I do that, how do people contact you, Jill?
Well, the actual best way to contact me right now is to check out my online journal. I have a literary journal on writing and spirituality that is the first issue is up now, and the second issue will be going up next. And I can be contacted through that website, and that URL is www.writingthewhirlwind.net.
And I love that website. I haven't been to it for a while, I will confess, but I'm going to be there before the day's out. So
it has changed since you last saw.
We will get there. I'll tell you, since you can't see us, I want you to know that Renee has filled 3 pages of notes from our conversation so far.
Oh, that's a good note.
Yeah, so now it's your turn to sit back and relax, and I'm going to turn now to Renee, and we'll get back to you in a bit. Renee Winchester wrote a book. You got it published, right? And you won a writing award. You went on a book tour, and while you were out there, you discovered something unsettling, that the number of talented authors whose basements are filled with unsold books. Well, that led Renee to write Stress-Free Marketing, Practical Advice for the Newly Published Author. Welcome, Renee.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I've enjoyed, this is the first time in a long time that I've had a book from both of my guests on the show, and I have read them, and I have thumbed them, and I've made notes. But as I mentioned in the introduction, this is not your first book. In fact, your first book resulted in your writing of this one, didn't it?
Correct.
Tell our listeners about that.
I was on tour with In the Garden with Billy in my home state of North Carolina. I was at a conference, and I met this woman who had a beautiful book. It was absolutely stunning. It had high-quality photographs, and it was just phenomenal. But it was $34.95, and in today's market, $34.95 doesn't sell.
No, it doesn't.
It does not. And so when we spoke, she was talking to me about marketing, of course, as authors do. What are you doing that works?
Mm-hmm,
and, of course, the wonderful thing about authors is that we'll share those secrets with anyone. And so when I was talking to her about marketing, she said, "What do you suggest that I do?" And I said, "Discount your book." which she didn't like because she had invested $20,000 in this book.
Oh, my.
And had purchased 2,000. For the 20,000, she got 2,000 books, 1,000 of which were still in her basement unsold. So my heart went out to her because what do you do when you have a basement full of books? How do you get those books into the hands of people who will love them as much as you do? And that's a challenge that we all authors have.
Now, you share that in the book itself, not quite as much detail, but the example that you used after that on the pricing intrigued me. You talked about Grisham and one other author who's escaping me. Could
Pat
you share
Conroy.
That? Yeah, could you share that?
Well, I'm a very honest person, and what I want to do is to keep you from making a financial mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So when you are trying, if you're self-publishing particularly, and you're trying to set the book price, you need to be careful and know not only who the market is, but who you are as an author. And I have my friend is Patty Callahan Henry and Karen Spears Zacharias, so along with a number of other talented New York Times best-selling authors, their books are not priced over $15.95.
That's right.
So who do I think I am trying to publish anything over that price? And in addition to that, I think today people have $20 of expendable income. They want a cup of coffee and a good book. And so if I can provide the good book, then they will enjoy what I've written and be able to also enjoy a cup of coffee and escape from this hectic world that we're in right now.
They may not be able to get a latte, but they can get a cup of coffee. I like that. Well, tell us more about the book. How did you determine that you would call it a practical guide? Actually, it's practical advice, stress-free marketing, practical advice for the newly published. What connotes for you practical? What's in there?
For me, practical means I have this philosophy, if I can do it, anyone can do it. And when you speak to authors, inevitably they're going to say, I hate to market my book. They think someone else is going to do that for them, which they're not. And so what I needed to do was put it in a term that is really easy to understand. If you do this, if you reach out to these people, then good things will happen. If you write a good quality book, then good things will happen. So practical means just simple. You can do it, and you can do it without stressing yourself out in the process.
You know, I talked with two individuals yesterday who have now become clients of mine, and I know it's going to happen every time when I have that initial conversation, but I wait for it, and that is, now how do I get published? They haven't written the book yet. They may not even have written the first word, but how do I get published? And so I take them through the traditional and the self-publishing route, and they say, well, I want the book tour kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, fine. You set that up regardless of how you publish. You got to. I have a friend, Ahmad Miraji of BookLogics, who says 20% of the book project is the writing, 80% is the marketing.
Exactly. And hello to Ahmad, because I just did a workshop at BookLogic. Thank you so much. I did reach out to him and say, we knew that. We knew that that was part of the deal,
sure.
Was that if you don't market it, then goodness gracious, you've wasted an investment of time. And you don't want to do that. But mm-hmm. I think the reason that I wrote the book was to help other people be successful. There's enough readers out there for everyone. You just have to find them.
Now, you just said, and you also write in your book, that you speak in harsh realities. You and I are going to get along real well here, especially about pricing and marketing. What was the most shocking, surprising, or painful lesson that you learned?
Oh, during the book tour? Okay. Well, in the book
tour.
Yes. There have been so many, and I do tell people that everything that's in the book has personally happened to me. I've personally experienced it in some level, either through someone or after the process. I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't believe people are still doing that. I'm going to tell you about something that was very painful, that someone didn't understand was hurtful, and that was, I was at an event and someone brought their own books to sell.
Oh.
And what she didn't understand is that after the event was over, I would have helped her network after the event was over. Don't come into the event with your bag full of books before the event starts and try to sell your book. And I'm not a New York Times bestselling author, but I will be one day. And she could be too, but she needs to understand that process. So that was very hurtful. I knew that she was not doing it to hurt me. She just didn't understand the process. And I think that's what we really need to do before we publish, is we need to do the research, attend some book signings, understand the manners behind the means of getting the book there. And another thing that was incredibly difficult is when I meet people who are desperate and they come to me and say, take my book and then do a review on Amazon. That's not going to help you.
No, it's not. It's not. What other kinds of things? You talk about meeting the one lady with the $34.95 book and 1,000 of them in her basement. How many other people like that did you meet?
Oh, goodness, you got an honest person. I would say three-quarters of the people that I meet that are self-published have a basement full of books. Because I think what happens is when you're self-published, you get a deal if you get more copies. If you purchase more copies, then the price is lower.
Yes,
so if you're trying to be a business person, you're going to purchase the most copies for your money. However, what I advise people is do not go over 200, 250 copies.
That's right.
Because if you, when you sell them, then you're going to be so excited and motivated and energized, you're going to order another 250 and have no problem selling that. However, if you've got 2,000 sitting in the basement, every time you go into the basement, you look at this tower of books saying, oh my Lord, I'm never going to get rid of these books. And then you fall into this depression of, I'm not a good enough author, I'm not a good salesperson, no one likes my book, and it's just a vicious cycle when it could all be prevented if you just make good business choices.
And sometimes that requires finding a publishing company that's willing to give you an a la carte menu.
Yes.
Because most of them give you a bronze, silver, or gold.
Yes, I just spoke on that particular bronze, silver, or gold company yesterday. Yes, they do, but you have to educate yourself about the process. And that's what, if you're educated, then you understand, you know, I don't have to go for the gold package. I can go for the gold on a smaller, more economical package. They're not going to refuse you when you want to make another order.
That's true. What other kinds of practical advice do you have in here that just spring to your mind that you want to put out over the airwaves?
Well, I think one of the things is not to fall for expensive public relations material, and that is buying business cards and bookmarks, because these companies also sell packages of T-shirts and hats, magnets, all kinds of things that you can do at home. I print all my bookmarks at home through an Excel file. It's not difficult. You're already going to have the PDF. You are of the book cover. You have a PDF of a headshot. You can do it yourself. That's what makes it practical. And then when you need bookmarks, you can print 20 bookmarks instead of having another 1,000 bookmarks to go with those 1,000 books that are in the basement. You can do it yourself. You're going to have to anyway. So just teach yourself how to make smart choices and in a cost-effective manner.
And we've been talking self-publishing, but the truth is, if you go with a traditional publisher, you still have to do that.
You still have to do that. I don't know who put out the misinformation that if you have a traditional publisher, that you don't have to do any marketing. That is a lie. It's a lie. It is. I mean, because
sure
I did interview all of the people that were mentioned in the book just to confirm that, you know, okay, I know this, but I need you to tell me for certain. And what happens is you might be assigned a publicist, but you get him or her for 1 week if you're lucky. And that's it, maybe two. And then you're on your own.
And I think what people get
caught up in is the idea of a book tour. And traditional publishers are more than happy to set one up if you're willing to pay for it.
Well, exactly. You're going to buy the ticket. You're going to pay for the motel room. That's what people use their advances for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's one of the common themes, whether you publish traditionally or the self-publishing route. You have to do the marketing.
You have to do the marketing.
Well, is your book out yet? I know I have an unauthorized, but it's an uncorrected proof.
It is an uncorrected. That's exactly right. It is out. It is out now.
When did it come out?
It came out in December.
Okay.
December.
Meeting with smashing success, right?
Well, see, I'm not doing a book tour for this one because the purpose of me writing the book was to get out of my soul the help that I knew I could give to someone else. This is my gift to writers everywhere. I'm not doing a book tour on that because I'm writing In the Kitchen with Billy. So I don't have time to do a book tour.
Oh, you are. But people can still buy it,
of
right?
Of course they can. And I'm doing workshops all over.
Are you?
All over the Atlanta metro area and in North Carolina also.
Okay. Well, you've mentioned Billy a couple of times here. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Billy.
Oh, my goodness. Billy has a birthday. He will be 80 in just a few weeks.
Mm.
And he was one of the people that I just passed every day and didn't notice him. And to go into what Jill spoke about, you have to kind of analyze yourself continually. And am I seeing people? Am I reaching out to people? And when I did, then this magical book came about, and, you know, the rest is history. He's the last farmer in Roswell, Georgia.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. So Billy is not the little boy Billy. Billy is he may be a little boy in mind and spirit, but he is grandfather.
He is grandfather. He is. He's a wonderful man.
Well, how has becoming an author affected your life, your business, whatever you were doing?
It is a busy life being an author today. It is. I had that question at a workshop actually yesterday, how do you do it all? And I said, I don't sleep a lot because you really have to get yourself on a schedule of I'm going to do marketing this particular day or I'm going to write this particular day or edit. And then you have to be flexible enough that when the book clubs call and they want you to come, you have to do that. You have to make that and then somehow juggle the family and wife responsibilities as well. It's not glamorous being an author.
But it's fun,
isn't it? It's fun because you love the words that you write.
Well, let me ask you the question that I asked of Jill and I try to ask of all of my guests. What advice or encouragement would you give to anybody who writes, but particularly business leaders or entrepreneurs?
I loved Jill's answer. That was on one of my notes that I wrote. And I say write from your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Write, you know, we know you write for a reason. You have a purpose in what you have to write in the business world. But I think now more than ever, people are responding to a genuine, true heart on the corporate level, on just you and I, just professional level. They want your heart. And I think when you write from your heart, you can never go wrong.
I really appreciate that answer because that's something I teach and share too. Actually, I say let's work on the throat, which is the midpoint between the head and the heart, because if you put too much head in, then it's intellectual. If you put too much heart, it's just too passionate, too airy-fairy. You need that combination. Well, if people want to be in contact with you, and I'm sure they do, how would they do that?
Well, I have a blog called adviceforauthors.wordpress.com. And then, of course, my name is spelled a little differently. So I am at www.renewinchester.com.
So that's reneewinchester.com, but Renee is R-E-N-E-A.
Yes, sir.
Okay, here comes the most difficult part for me in any show I do. I'm going to open up the mics and hope that Jill or Renee have a question for each other.
Jill, are you
Hi,
there?
Renee.
Hello. And then we'll talk on top of each other like women do. I'll let you go first.
Well, I found what you had to say very fascinating, very interesting, and I'm looking forward to getting your book. One of the questions that came to mind for me is as I was listening to you, is what, aside from the, you know, you talked about book tours, you talked about the Amazon Book Review not being a wonderful marketing tool, which I think most writers discover that, what would you suggest writers do?
Well, first of all, I have to give a shout out to every library in the world, that because they are my first love. And when I tell authors to go to the library, I get this deer in the headlight look, because you program your authors to focus on book sales, then you tell them to befriend their local librarian, and they say, but they won't sell my book. But your local librarian is the smartest person you will ever know, because they know everything, they know everyone. They will host events for you for free. They will allow you to sell your book there. And what you will do as an author in return is you will donate your book to the library, and you will donate a portion of your sales to the Friends of the Library in thanks for their supporting you.
Oh, that's a wonderful idea. That's a wonderful suggestion.
And then quickly, because I know we're kind of short on time, I also am a true supporter of the local independent bookstore. I do not send people to Amazon. I send people to my local bookstore. So as an author, when authors come to me and say, how do I get my book in the bookstore? My answer is, it is not your job to do that. It is your job to send readers to that bookstore asking for your book.
Oh, I like that one. I like that one. Well, tell me, Renee, with all those notes, do you have a question for Jill?
Oh, well, my first question for Jill is, oh my gosh, I need to come to see you and take a creative nonfiction class.
I'd love to have you.
I would love to do that. Oh, my goodness. But I wanted to actually ask you specifically, what advice can you give to frustrated authors? Because I meet so many out there, and they're almost in a panic. So what should they be doing?
I think that my advice, and I've certainly worked with many, many frustrated authors, is to really comes out of my experience with Buddhism, which is a sense of yielding to that frustration, which doesn't mean giving up or giving into the frustration, but yielding to it and accepting it and opening your doors to it. Opening your doors, it means acknowledging to yourself that you're frustrated, acknowledging to yourself all of these negative feelings. One of the things that we tend in our culture to do with negative feelings is to either negate them and say, oh, I'm not going to feel this way, I'm going to be happy, or to try to fight them. Oh, I'm going to fight this sadness, I'm going to fight off this frustration. What I tell writers to do is open your doors to it, feel it, acknowledge it, say hello to it, become friends with it. The Buddhist writer Pema Chodron talks about sitting in the cave with the demons, and just be with it for a while. Acknowledge it, communicate with it. And when you do that, it loses power.
Wow. Now, I love that. And personally, I really do love that, because I do the same. I'll say, okay, here comes frustration, and I'm going to fight it.
Yeah, we do that.
Yeah,
and
so you spoke to my heart.
And next time, just turn to it and shake its hand and say, well, hello. You're part of me. You're part of what I'm experiencing right now. And you can't conquer me. You can't defeat me. But I just want you to know I know you're there.
Well, I wrote that down. Say hello to frustration and you can't conquer me.
I'm loving this. Do you have any more questions of either of you?
I have one more for Jill, because I think a lot of authors really feel pressure to have an MFA. So what advice do you give to authors who really feel that pressure, that in order to be a, quote, real writer, I need to have an MFA? Would you speak to that?
Yes. I loved my MFA program, and I learned a tremendous amount in it. But the MFA, one of the reasons I went into the MFA program was to give myself credentials to teach writing at a college. And you don't need that MFA to be a writer. You need training. I'm a firm believer in taking classes, taking workshops, working with a writing coach, reading everything you can get your hands on about the writing process, but you don't need an MFA to get that training. So my advice would be focus on getting the training that you need. But unless you are trying to get a job teaching at a college, you don't need an MFA to be a writer.
I think half of the listening audience just breathed a sigh of relief. Thank you.
Well, I hope.
Well, Renee and I are sitting here grinning ear to ear, grateful for that. Anything more from you, Jill? You want to run by Renee?
I think Renee. What my next step is to get Renee's book, because I think that's where I can really gain something, and okay. It's been very insightful.
She probably would send it to you, or if you contact her, I don't think she's going to send you to the local bookstore here.
No.
Well, I will definitely be contacting her after on her. I have her website written down. So.
Great. Well, the clock is on us. Excuse me. I welcome your comments and suggestions about our content and about our guests. And if you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. And you can do that by sending me an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Andy, for co-hosting, keeping me on track, and the show going out.
It's an easy ride back here.
Well, we like to hear that. And thank you to our guests, Dr. Jill Jepson and Renee Winchester. Jill, would you share your contact information one more time, please?
Yes, www.writingthewhirlwind, that's WRITING, the whirlwind, all one word, .net.
And Renee?
It is reneewinchester.com, which is www.reneawinchester.com.
Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. And you can learn more about Right Choice Services at www.right, and that's W-R-I-T-E, choiceservices.com. I hope you will join us next week and tell your friends about the show. In fact, I encourage you to send them an email right now to invite them to listen live or to the downloads. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time at righterightnow.businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.